is Allison Carter with the Milestones Podcast. This is episode 47. And today I wanted to talk about autism and Halloween, because Halloween is coming up here pretty soon. And it's something that we need to sometimes prepare for. So before I get into that, I wanted to talk about a research study that I found. I haven't done that lately, so I wanted to make sure and fit that in today. The study that I found for today is called Clinical Improvement Following Vitamin D3 Supplementation in Autism Spectrum Disorder. It was published in the Nutritional Neuroscience Journal in June of this year, 2017. They tested vitamin D levels in 215 children with autism, and they compared that with 285 children without autism. The vitamin D levels in children with autism were significantly lower than the children without the diagnosis. 13% of the kids with autism had an overt deficiency, and 71.2% had what they considered an inadequate level of vitamin D. While none of the children without autism were vitamin D deficient, and 61.8% of them had inadequate levels. The researchers tested the children before treatment using the Autism Behavior Checklist, or ABC for short, and the Childhood Autism Rating Scale, or the CARS, as a baseline. The scores on these, the higher the scores equals, the more severe the autism. It was noted that the children with low vitamin D had higher total scores and language scores on the ABC, meaning they had more severe autistic symptoms in those areas. The CARS did not correlate with vitamin D levels. Now, the treatment they used in the study was that each child received an intramuscular dose, basically a shot, of vitamin D one time per month, and each child also took an oral vitamin D supplement every day for 3 months. After the treatment, all of the kids had significantly increased vitamin D levels. The total ABC scores and some of the subscale scores on the ABC, like social skills, body and object use, language, and self-help, in addition to the CARS total scores, were all reduced significantly compared to the scores before the treatment. They also showed a decrease in sensory scores on the ABC, although these were not significantly decreased. As a result of this study, the researchers recommend vitamin D3 supplements as a treatment for kids with autism who have reduced levels of vitamin D. Now, the ages of the kids who participated in this study were not given in the report that I found, but they did specify that this might be an effective treatment for kids with autism, especially younger kids. So today I wanted to get into some tips for kids with autism, and this will hopefully be helpful information for those of you who are parents of kids with autism, or if you are therapists or teachers that work with kids who have autism, or if you know of some parents who might find this information useful, you can pass this episode along to them as well. I know it's a little bit early to talk about Halloween, because it's still a couple weeks away, but I do think it's a good time to start preparing, because it can take a little while to practice and basically see how comfortable they're going to be with the Halloween activities. Usually on Halloween as kids, we dress up in costumes and walk around our neighborhoods and ring doorbell and say trick or treat and ask for candy. So as you can imagine, for kids with autism, this can be a pretty difficult night. And as parents, we want our kids to be able to participate in as many activities as they can, especially things that other kids are doing. And really, Halloween is no different. Now for today, I'm going to be trying to give a bunch of different ideas for Halloween nights and activities surrounding Halloween. And not all of them will be appropriate for you and your child and your family. So just listen to all the ideas and figure out which ones, if any, hopefully some of them will work for your situation. The first thing that I want to talk about is using a social story. A social story is a story using pictures. So you can use actual pictures of your child from maybe Halloween in the past or other events where they've dressed up or worn a costume. Or you can find pictures of kids just on the internet trick-or-treating and dressing up. If you can get those printed or somehow a hard copy of those where you can put them together to make a booklet, that would be probably the best situation. And you can start to tell the story through the pictures of what happens on Halloween. A social story about Halloween might look like this. One picture of a child putting their costume on. A picture of a child with their costume on. A picture of a child walking down the sidewalk. A picture of a child ringing a doorbell. Then a picture of a child saying trick or treat. And a picture of candy going into their bucket or pillowcase or whatever they hold when they go trick-or-treating. Another picture of a child walking down the sidewalk and going to another house. And a picture of the child going back to their own house. Then a picture of the child taking off their costume and having their PJs on. And a picture of a child wrapped up in their favorite blanket. Now, of course, this can look completely different for different children. Some kids may do better with only three or four pictures, and some kids might do okay with however many pictures I just gave in my example, eight or nine. This really just depends on your own child's skill level with understanding stories and being able to pay attention long enough to see all the pictures and to listen to the whole thing. The whole point of social stories is to make the situation as predictable as possible for kids. It is meant to be a way for them to start thinking about what's going to happen on Halloween. And hopefully you can get to a point, if you talk about the social story every day with them leading up to Halloween, that they will be able to start telling the story along with you, or maybe to you instead. And it's okay if they can't do that, but hopefully you'll be able to find a way where they can somehow interact with the story and with you. Another idea is that I would start trying on their Halloween costume early. It's already 11 days before Halloween, so like now would be a good time if you haven't done this already. Some kids don't have any trouble at all with wearing a costume, but there are other kids who have sensory issues, who only like to wear certain textures or materials of clothing. And some kids are just a little slow to warm up to wearing things that are different than what they're used to. And for those kids, sometimes it just takes trying on their costume a few times before it becomes familiar to them and they're more willing to put it on, or maybe even excited about putting it on. Of course, there are some kids who don't like wearing different materials or textures at all, and even trying them on several times still doesn't work. They may try to resist or fight you to even try and put them on. And in that situation, they would probably do better with either just a Halloween-themed t-shirt or maybe just their regular clothes that they're comfortable wearing, with a set of wings or a superhero cape attached to the back, or some other probably more creative idea that you might be able to come up with. So another idea that you can do to try and prepare them ahead of time for Halloween is to actually practice trick-or-treating. And it may be a good idea to start this in your own home where they will probably be the most comfortable. You can even start by just using like bedroom doors and have someone be on one side of the door and the child and hopefully another adult or maybe their sibling be on the other side. And you can have them practice knocking on the door, and you open it up with your bowl of candy and basically help them practice saying trick or treat or happy Halloween or hi or whatever phrase or word they're able to say. And if your child doesn't talk, maybe they can use a sign, like the sign for more or please or thank you. Whatever it is that your child is able to do, this is a good time to have them practice it. They can go through the motions of what it might be like when they go to somebody's door when they're trick-or-treating. And this is something that you can practice several times or a couple of different times in your own home. And basically making kind of a game out of it. I also found these really cute Halloween cards just by doing a basic internet search that somebody had made and posted. And they said something like, trick or treat, and hi, my name is blank, and I have autism. I cannot say trick or treat, but I'm trying, and have a happy Halloween. This is something that your child could possibly hand out to the people that are giving them candy. And it's a good way for them to be able to communicate and interact with the people without having to talk to them or use their signs, especially if that's too hard for them or they aren't able to do that yet. I will put the link for these on the show notes for today, and you can find them there, but I'm sure you could also make these yourself at home pretty easily too. So if you think you're going to use something like the cards, I would also have those ready during your practice time at home so they can actually go through the motions of that and practice using them and seeing what that's like and seeing if that's going to work for them. After you've done some practicing in your home, you can practice at your front door. And this will be a more realistic setup because they could actually go to the front door and possibly ring the doorbell or knock on the front door. Again, it will still be at your own house and with you and maybe their siblings or other family members that they're comfortable with. But this is a really good thing to do because the repetition and the practice of trick-or-treating in a way that is comfortable for them, it can help build their confidence for when they actually go out and trick-or-treat at the neighbor's houses. Again, it's not the real situation by doing it at home, but it is a good place to start because you can also see how things might go on the actual Halloween night, and it won't be a completely new experience for your child. They won't be doing it for the first time. If you know your neighbors well, you can also ask them if you could practice ringing their doorbell one time to make it more realistic, but still at a time when it is comfortable for your child. If your neighbor or neighbors would be willing to have their Halloween bowl of candy ready, and when your child rings the doorbell, they open the door and go through the motions of trick-or-treating like they would do on actual Halloween, this would be a really good practice for your child. Still in a setup or practice way, but in a slightly more realistic situation because it involves somebody that they might know, but probably don't know that well, or at least as well as family members. And you could probably do this during daylight hours, which might make your child feel more comfortable. Of course, you might want to do it in the early evening time or at whatever time you will actually be going trick-or-treating. This could also be confusing for some kids who might be wondering why we're only going to one or two houses and then stopping because it's just practice, that to them, they may not quite understand that it's practice and not actual Halloween. So that's also something to think about. And if you can, hopefully explain to your child before you do this practice exactly how many houses you'll be going to and that it's just to get ready for Halloween, but that it's not actually Halloween yet. So hopefully after you've done some practicing at home, and possibly with the neighbors, and you've got their costume all set, now you're as prepared as you can be at this point, let's talk about actual Halloween trick-or-treating events. First of all, if you have been practicing and you kind of figure out that this might be too stressful for them, you could consider taking them to a different type of Halloween trick-or-treating event. You might be able to find an event in your area that is geared towards kids with special needs or specifically kids with autism. I do have a link to the Autism Speaks website in the show notes for today, where you can search for events in your area. These might be things like trunk or treat, where people set up their cars in a parking lot. Sometimes it's at a church or a community center, and people decorate their trunks of their cars with Halloween things, and kids walk around and do trick-or-treating at each person's car. This does eliminate the need to walk up to somebody's house and ring the doorbell and wait for the door to open. It could be a good option for some kids who have anxiety around that activity. It is also nice because you don't have to walk as far for the event, but you can still participate in trick-or-treating and getting candy and wearing a costume and being around other kids that are also doing the same thing. If you think that all of this is going to be too stressful for your child after practicing and trying some different things, it may be a better option to stay at home and either pass out candy to the other kids that come to your house or turn off the lights and just do your normal routine like you would any other day. If you decide to stay home and pass out candy, you might consider sitting outside on the front porch and just being ready for the kids when they come up to your house. Some kids don't like when the doorbell rings at their house, so if your child has some issues with that, sitting outside would eliminate the doorbell ringing. But they could still participate in Halloween events by giving candy out to the other kids that come up to the house. And your child could still wear their costume if they wanted to. But of course, if you've done all this practicing and you think they are ready for trick-or-treating, then let's talk about some strategies for going out. So when it's time to go out, you might want to consider using a stroller or a wagon that can carry your child if they get tired or if they just want to have a break from the kids that are running by them on the sidewalk and maybe bumping them. You can also carry extra things in it, like a drink and a snack and their sensory items that they have, things that they like to use when they are needing to be comforted or when they're feeling stressed or anxious. They might be things like their weighted blanket, if they have one, or a fidget toy that they like. Maybe it's their chewy tube, or it could be headphones with their iPod. So if they need to have a break from all of the noises going on around them, they can use those. Whatever items that you usually have for them to help them feel calm would be a good thing to bring with you. I didn't mention this before, but you might think about if your child uses a weighted backpack as one type of a calming strategy, maybe their costume could incorporate wearing a backpack as part of it. Also, have a plan for the route that you're going to take. Think about which way would be the best way to start out going, probably to the houses that have people where you kind of know them would be a good place to start. Some kids do better with a visual plan, so if your child likes that, you can draw a simple map of your street and talk about which way you're going to go. And also, you could talk about how many houses you're going to go trick-or-treating at. Let's say you decided to go to 10 houses. Then you could cross off or count down somehow by marking out on a piece of paper. You could draw 10 houses and cross off each one after you go to one. Then when all the houses are crossed off, you can be done and go back home. But of course, if everything is going well, you might decide that you want to draw 5 more houses and continue on that way. Again, really, this just depends on how your child is doing and if they want to keep going and if you're okay with it. But at least this can give them a visual cue, which can be helpful for them to see that there is an end to it. Because trick-or-treating is not a concrete activity with a final ending. And there are some kids that really just do better with having some idea of when they will be done. Even if they're having a good time, it can still, some kids just still need this to help them process the whole activity. You might want to try and go trick-or-treating with other family members or other kids that your child is familiar with or friends with. Also, as you're walking, keep an eye out for the next house and watch for those Halloween decorations that people sometimes have that are motion-activated. They might jump out of the ground or just turn on and make a scary sound when you walk by. They're meant to surprise or scare you. And if these things are scary for your child, you definitely want to be on the lookout for them so they don't get surprised by them and have to deal with that. Or at least you can try to prepare your child for those things and show them that they're there before they walk up to the house. They might decide to skip that house if it's just too much. Halloween can be a night full of stimulating situations, and for a child with autism, or sensory processing issues for that matter, this can be not just stimulating, but overstimulating. There are so many things to consider as far as sensation that there is no way I could cover all of them in this show. But just recognizing that if your child has sensory issues, even if they do a great job trick-or-treating, by the time they get home, their sensory systems could be on overload. This is something to keep in mind, so when you get home, you may need to help them or encourage them to do their activities that you use as calming strategies. This could be things like jumping on their trampoline or getting under their heavy blanket. It could be swinging or blanket swinging. It could also just be putting on some headphones and listening to a song or watching a video. Whatever things work for your child, have those ready for when you get home. They may just need some time doing these activities in order to reset after all of this stimulation from Halloween. And hopefully it will help them be able to settle down and get ready for bedtime or whatever at-home activity you do after going trick-or-treating. Now, on the flip side of trick-or-treating, those of you who are just handing out candy to the kids in the neighborhood, but you are not a parent of a child with special needs, if you are listening to this show, I believe that you will be sensitive to the needs of any child that comes to your house. And if you are that person, on behalf of those parents out there who are taking their child with special needs trick-or-treating, I will say thank you for them. Remember, this holiday is supposed to be for the kids, so anything you can do to make it special for them will be appreciated by their parents. Okay, I wanted to let you guys know that on this show and the last show that I did, I was trying something different. If you've been listening to my show for a while, you probably know that I usually type out what I'm going to say before I record it. But these last two shows, I just wanted to try having an outline and talking through the information without reading it. This is not easy for me to do, and I feel like it definitely sounds better when I'm able to write it all out first. I wanted to try this because I have been trying to finish writing my book recently, and I have been typing so much for that I was feeling like my hands were going to fall off. So I thought I would try this and see how it went, and also give my hands a break from so much typing. But I do think it sounds so much better when I'm able to write out what I want to say before I say it. So I'm going to go back to doing that for all of my shows. Sorry if it's been a little off these last two shows, but bear with me as I get back into typing them out. It may turn out that I only have one episode per week for a little while, at least until I can get my book finished. And if I can get some more interviews set up, I may be able to continue having two shows per week, with one being the one that I type out and one being the interview. Also, don't forget, guys, you can help support this show and the work that I do here simply by using my Amazon links to do all of your Amazon shopping. All you have to do is go to my website. It's mymidwesttherapy.com and click on any of my Amazon links. Then just do your normal Amazon shopping and that's it. I will get a small kickback from the sales and that will help me be able to continue to put out more shows. I also wanted to thank Mama Bear for writing a review on iTunes for me. Those reviews will help move the show up in the ratings so more people will be able to find it. I know it's an extra step, but think about all of those parents or therapists or teachers out there who might find some of the information in my shows helpful. You can help them find it by just clicking on the star ratings and writing a small comment. Thank you so much for listening.